The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of this station. Content is for educational purposes only. Consult a financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence if investing. Calls are pre-screened and the show was pre-recorded earlier this week. Rick is with Edelman Financial Engines, a part of Financial Engines Advisors, LLC, and the investment advisor that furnishes this program. Barron's ranks financial advisory firms based on assets managed, team size, experience, and regulatory record. Firms self-nominate. Investment returns and experience are not considered. Advisors in the Hall of Fame have been in the top 100 for 10-plus years. Future performance is not guaranteed.
This is the Rick Edelman Show. Barron's ranks Edelman Financial Engines the number one independent investment advisor in the country. And Rick is in the Barron's Financial Advisor Hall of Fame. Now, here's Rick Edelman.
Welcome to the Rick Edelman Show. Very happy holiday weekend to you. That's the holiday season. Hope you're having a lot of fun. Last week here on the program, I told you that the Secure Act might not pass the Congress and was under threat of being buried in the logjam going on Capitol Hill. I'm very happy to tell you that the Secure Act has been passed. And assuming that the president signs it, it'll become effective January 1. The Secure Act is the first major piece of legislation affecting the retirement world since 2006. The bill contains 29 major changes to current law. I want to highlight for you some of the most important changes that are involved. Number one, if you are still working past the age of 70 and a half, you can still contribute to an IRA. At the moment, you're not allowed to do that, but starting next year, you will. Also, we all know when we have to start taking money out of our IRAs and retirement accounts. Under the new law, that gets delayed to age 72, not 70 and a half, but 72. So this delays a couple of years on the acknowledgement we're all living longer. Retirement plans are now also going to have to show you how much income your account can generate once you retire. This is crucial because your account statements, think about it, they tell you the balance of your account. Well, that's just a number. How do you translate that number into monthly income for the rest of your life? From now on, starting next year, your periodic statement from your 401k is going to tell you how much income your balance will generate. I think it's fabulous because when you see how much income it produces, obviously that's a much smaller number than the overall balance. I mean, hey, great, your balance shows you've got $100,000 in the account. Well, you know, $100,000, I mean, think about that. $100,000 is only $4,000 a year. That's only $300 a month. So which sounds more exciting? Hey, I've got an account balance of $100,000. Or, oh my goodness, it's going to generate $300 a month. See the point? I think it'll help motivate people to saving even more, to be less likely to borrow money out of the account. I think it's really fabulous. Also, the law now allows annuities to be included in 401k plans. Right now, 401ks are pretty much limited to mutual funds. By allowing annuities into the 401k, millions of Americans who have no effective advice, and let's face it, most folks in most retirement accounts at most employers don't get any effective advice as to how to manage the money in their accounts. They have no idea how to choose investments. They have no idea how to generate income. And when people don't know how to do it, they end up doing it wrong, and they end up running out of money in retirement. By allowing annuities to be included in 401ks, these folks who otherwise don't have access to advice can set themselves up with a lifetime income via that annuity, all of it inside the 401k. Simple and easy. Now, still, you know me, I'm not a huge fan of using annuities, and I'm not a huge fan of using them inside a retirement account, but that's because we're professional financial advisors. We offer here at Edelman Financial Engines advice to more than 10 million employees around the country, employees of companies that have hired Edelman Financial Engines to provide them with advice in the workplace 401k plan. So these folks can get our advice, and that gives them a leg up because they have the value of professional advice compared to the many, many more millions of American workers who don't have our services because their employers haven't hired us, and they don't get any effective advice or education from any resource. They're all on their own. So, hey, given the choice of no education, no support, no advice, I'm glad that annuities will be available to them because it's probably better than what they're likely to choose for themselves. Also, what about small employers? Most workers in America who have a 401k plan tend to work for a big employer. Small employers tend not to offer 401ks. They're expensive. They're time-consuming. They're fraught with liability. The new law, the SECURE Act, allows small employers to band together to set up 401k plans mutually. And they get a $500 tax credit to help them pay for running the plan. And part-time employees can now enroll in 401ks as well. And it's small companies that are more likely to hire part-timers than big companies. So all that's really terrific news. Another change in the law. You will now be able to withdraw up to $5,000 from your retirement plan without penalty upon the birth of a child or adoption of a child. Help you defray the costs of the new baby. Also, you got student loans? You'll be able to use money in a 529 plan to help pay those loans off, which is another terrific way for folks who discover that they didn't use all the money in the 529. Now they have student loan debt. Now they're allowed to attach one to the other. It's really terrific. There is one piece of fine print in the law that is causing consternation among some folks. I'm not personally in this camp, but I do acknowledge some folks are upset about it. The stretch IRA. This is a feature that exists currently. If you inherit an IRA from somebody, you're allowed to take payments from the account over the course of your lifetime. You can stretch the payments over the course of your lifetime. Hence, it's called a stretch IRA. That is being eliminated. You will now have to take that money not over the course of your entire lifetime, but instead over the course of the next 10 years. Personally, I don't think it's that big a deal. I don't think it affects all that many people. I don't think the additional tax liability is all that important. But I need you to be aware of it nonetheless. We're very excited and enthused that this major piece of legislation is sailing through, and we are very hopeful that we ultimately will see it, in fact, signed by the president. By the time, in fact, you are hearing this, it might have already occurred. And it's one of the most important pieces of legislation in, about 15 years or so. So we're very excited to see it. Simultaneously, the IRS has issued proposed regulations that will further reduce the amount of money you have to withdraw from your RMD. We'll have to wait and see if that goes through, but it's also looking pretty good itself. I want to ask you, though, a fundamental question about all of this. You know, we hear in the news, and you hear on this program a lot, that pension plans across the country are going the way of the dodo. People don't enjoy pension plans to the same degree that our elders did. You know, back in the day, it seemed like everybody everywhere worked for an employer that offered a pension plan. Today, less than 17% of private employers offer pension plans, and more are canceling them. Mercer now says that 2/3 of the pension plans that still exist are going to be dropping the guaranteed benefits to new workers within the next 5 years. And even if your pension plan does exist, even if you work for an employer that offers one, the average pension plan is 15% underfunded. Think about that for a minute. Even if you're getting a pension plan and they're promising you a certain benefit, how do you know that they're going to be able to pay you the benefit that they're promising to you? Well, I want to take this a step further. And this question now applies to you, whether or not you have a pension where you work. I want to ask you a question. Just as we hear that pensions are underfunded and they therefore will not be able to generate the income as promised in retirement for somebody, I want to ask you this question. Are you underfunded, just like many employer pensions are underfunded? How do you know that you will have the money that you need in your retirement? What are your income sources? Will the money you've saved be sufficient to generate the income that you're going to need in retirement? You might be focusing intently on how much money you're putting into the account, how much money you're adding to your savings and investments. You might be focusing on your account balance that you receive every month or every time you look online at your statements. You see the balance of your account, the current value. You might be impressed that the value of the account is a lot higher now than it was a year ago. But let me ask you this question. Is it enough? How much income will that balance generate? I gave you the math a little bit ago. $100,000 can be reasonably expected to produce $300 a month. Do you have enough money in your accounts, among your savings and investments, at retirement, to generate the income you're going to need? If you can't give me the answer, if you can't articulate how much retirement income you will get, you don't know if you're underfunded. You don't know the degree to which you might be underfunded. And for that reason, you need to call us. You need to do it right now. 888-PLAN-RICK. You need to talk with one of my colleagues here at Edelman Financial Engines. We can do the math for you. You don't have to do any of the effort. We'll show you how much money you can reasonably be expected to have in retirement so that you can decide if it's enough. And if it isn't, we can show you what steps you need to take to improve the situation. Don't delay. Don't act in ignorance. Don't go with unverified assumptions that may prove to be incorrect. Give us a call at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-752-6742. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com. And let us do for you what we've done for thousands of folks just like you for the past 30-plus years. 888-PLAN-RICK, ricedelman.com.
More with the founder of one of the nation's largest independent investment advisory firms coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Edelman Show. Thanks for hanging around with me. Last year's worst stocks. Boy, I hope you didn't buy them last year. Coty, General Electric, Perrigo, Lennar, Applied Materials, Tyson Foods. Boy, I hope you didn't buy these stocks. Last year, 2018, these were the worst stocks. Coty was down 67%. GE down 57%. Perrigo down 56%. Lennar, Applied Materials, Tyson's Foods, down 38, 36, 34% in value in a single year. Can you imagine losing 30 to 70% of your money in a single stock in a single year? Oh, my goodness gracious. And if you did own them, I know what you did. Yes, sell them. Probably after you lost all that money. Well, golly gee willikers, guess what some of the best performing stocks of this year have been? Coty, General Electric, Perrigo, Lennar, Applied Materials, Tyson's Foods.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
Yeah, Coty, which last year lost 67%, is up 78% so far this year. GE, which lost 57% last year, is up 51% this year. Perrigo was down 56. This year, it's up 39. Lennar was down 38. This year, up 52. Applied Materials, down 36. It's up 78% this year. And Tyson's Foods, which was down 34% last year, is up 66% this year. The point of all of this is to demonstrate the wild volatility, the incredible difficulty, if not flat-out impossibility, of trying to bet on what's going to happen next in any individual stock. And this is why you shouldn't even try to play that game. In fact, it's not just individual stocks where you need to avoid playing the game. It's the broad economy as well. The Wall Street Journal surveys economists every single year and asks them to predict what is going to be the interest rate on the 10-year Treasury at the end of next year. And in 8 of the last 10 years, economists got it all wrong. I mean, if the economists, if professionals, academically trained, employed, earning hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, if they can't get it right, what makes you think that you can? And therefore, this is why I'm so concerned about a survey recently released by E-Trade. They surveyed their account holders, their investors, the people who have money at E-Trade. 38% of them said that they're satisfied with their portfolios. Only 38%. Two-thirds say that they are not satisfied with their investments. 21% said they're going to move their money out of their investments and into cash. And nearly as many said they're going to do the exact opposite.
Well, you say we try that one again, huh?
So check this out. 62% say they're not happy with their portfolio. And to solve the problem, as many say they're going to move into cash as say that they're going to move out of cash. In other words, you are probably feeling pretty smug about your portfolio. You either like it or you don't. And if you don't, you know what you're going to do about it. And you're feeling pretty smug and cocky and confident because you know what's best. Here's news for you, pal. The guy standing next to you is going to do the exact opposite as you. And he's feeling just as smug and cocky and confident as you are. One of you is crazy. Oh, yeah, I know. The other guy is. Well, you know what they say about the other guy. To the other guy, you're the other guy. Oh, and here's evidence that you really don't know what you're doing. A study was just released by the Ipsos Behavioral Science Center. They took a look at 401k plans all across the country. And as you know, with your retirement plan at work, you have a list of investments available to you. You look at the list every time you are trying to figure out which choices to select. Well, how is that list sorted when you look at it online or they hand you the brochure? You see this list. Many cases, the list is sorted alphabetically. Guess what they discovered? You guessed it. The funds at the top of the list, at the start of the alphabet, get 10% more money from employees than the funds at the bottom of the list. The funds in the 5th to 10th place get 5% less money than the funds at the top. This study was done by professors at Seton Hall University, St. Louis University, Kansas State University, in addition to the Ipsos Behavioral Science Center, and they discovered that when they gave employees education and they said, this list is randomly sorted, the choice at the top of the list is not meant to suggest it's the best choice. Even when employees were given financial education to warn them that the list is randomly sorted, it didn't matter. People continued to put more money in the top funds in the list than in the rest of the list. So, here's what you need to do. Resort the list manually. Use Word, cut and paste from the brochure, and randomize the list so that you aren't exhibiting an alphabetical bias. And how do I want you to resort the list? By expense ratio. Or by historic volatility, such as the Sharpe ratio. The Sharpe ratio invented by William Sharpe, who's the co-founder here at Edelman Financial Engines, Nobel Prize winning economist, who developed a volatility measure known as the Sharpe ratio because history tells us that lower cost funds tend to generate higher returns than higher cost funds. And that funds with lower volatility tend to outperform funds with higher volatility. Of course, past performance is no guarantee of future results. We all understand that. But if you're going to sort a list, instead of doing it alphabetically, and you don't know how to properly select your investments, and you're not going to ask a professional financial advisor for help, if you work for an employer that has hired financial engines, we're here to help you do that. But if you work for an employer that doesn't provide such services and you are on your own and you don't know how to do it, then sort it by expense ratio or volatility measures such as the Sharpe ratio. And the fact that you're getting it wrong is evidenced by this year. The S&P 500 so far this year is up over 25%. This is the best year we've had in the stock market in 6 years. And yet, investors have withdrawn $136 billion from U.S. stock funds this year. It's the biggest withdrawal on record. They've withdrawn money out and they've put the money into bonds and money market funds. In fact, in a recent poll from the American Association of Individual Investors, only 36% are optimistic about the stock market. Despite the fact this is the best year we've had in 6 years, despite the fact that unemployment is at the lowest rate since 1969, despite the fact that interest rates are among the lowest levels ever, investors, for some unknown reason, are extraordinarily negative. Helps explain why sales of annuities, fixed indexed annuities, are up 13% this year compared to last year. You've got to ask yourself, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And if you're not sure, let us help you. We've been helping our clients manage money for more than 3 decades, and we can help you too. Don't go it alone. Don't let your emotions get the better of you. 888-PLAN-RICK, online at ricestellman.com.
Author of the number one national bestseller, The Truth About Retirement Plans and IRAs, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Let's talk for a minute about stock market volatility. Hi, Rick Edelman here. You can expect to see market volatility, but don't let it frighten you out of your investment and retirement accounts. Now, I'm not making light of volatility. We get it. It's unsettling. But volatility is really simply a routine part of long-term investing. And the best way for you to avoid stock market volatility? Don't have all your money in stocks. That's why here at Edelman Financial Engines, we're careful to give our clients highly diversified portfolios, placing only a portion of assets into stocks. This helps give you the confidence that stock market volatility is really nothing to get concerned about. We've been helping thousands of clients just like you for 33 years. So come talk with us at Edelman Financial Engines and let us help put your market worries aside. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com. We talk often here on The Rick Edelman Show about Alzheimer's and the astonishing statistics associated with it. Roughly 1 in 10 Americans by the age of 60 will develop symptoms of Alzheimer's. It's 1 in 3 by age 85, 1 in 2 by age 90. One of the sad elements of our improvements in medical technology of increasing longevity is that we're in many cases only increasing the likelihood that you or a loved one will end up with Alzheimer's or dementia. There's no diagnostic tool. There's no treatment. There's no cure. There's no vaccine. It's 100% fatal. A couple of weeks ago, I read an op-ed in the Washington Post written by an emergency room physician who has more than 30 years of experience. The author is Dr. Jeffrey Hosta, and he joins us right now. Dr. Hosta, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
You wrote the following in your op-ed, quote, "Doctors are torturing dementia patients at the end of their life, and it's totally unnecessary." Tell us about that.
Well, yes. I see this, sadly, quite a bit in my line of work. Dementia, as you know, is irreversible. It never gets better. Like I tell patients and their families, that dementia patients have their good days, their bad days, but the trend is down. It never reverses itself. And I find that many people with advanced dementia are having painful and anxiety-provoking procedures done on them that would be appropriate for a person who had a chance to recover, but are totally inappropriate for someone who is not going to recover. And I feel that these people can't understand why things are being done, unlike a person without dementia who has his wits about him or her, but they feel pain, and they feel anxiety, and they feel fear. And you could see it in their faces, and it's really heartrending.
I think the approach that everybody has grown accustomed to, that we all grew up with, is the do-no-harm approach that physicians take, and the fact that physicians are there to prolong life, to cure us, to make us better. And we've gotten to the stage with medical technology and innovation that doctors are now pretty good at prolonging life. The question now becomes, is that life worth prolonging? And this is a very emotional subject. It's deeply embedded in our religious culture. What you're suggesting, I think, is that we need to rethink our approach to this and decide whether or not we should be engaging in certain life-saving therapies and interventions when the outcome is inevitable.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. Medical technology is at a point where we can prolong the heart beating, but we can't prolong the quality of life. And it's unfortunate, but that is the case. And a lot of those norms, like you're talking about, the Hippocratic Oath and so forth, were developed before there was this capability, before we had the technology to extend life beyond the point where in the past people would have died.
But I don't think you're talking about euthanasia, are you?
Oh, of course not. Of course not. So, I don't advocate that at all.
So explain to us the difference and what it is you are suggesting we begin to reconsider.
Well, here's the difference. If a person is irreversibly demented and they suffer like a bad infection or, say, a traffic accident or whatever, I certainly don't advocate euthanasia. I advocate letting nature take its course and keeping the person in comfort throughout their final hours or days on this planet. Lots of pain medicine, lots of oxygen, alleviate suffering, but don't put them through painful and anxiety-provoking interventions such as CPR, which often breaks ribs and is extremely painful. Those who live through it testify to this. I've seen CPR done when their life expectancy is a matter of hours or days. Why put the patient through the suffering? Or when, at best, you're going to buy another couple of weeks or months of demented existence where a patient lies in a nursing home, lying in his or her urine, not recognizing family, not knowing where they are or why they're there. I don't think that's compassionate. I think that's being cruel.
What do you suggest we do to alter this standard protocol? I mean, we have DNR notices, do not resuscitate notices often, and powers of attorney and such. Are they sufficient?
Well, yes. I think if they're done right, an advance directive is what I recommend anyone to have. In other words, it names a person who is responsible to make decisions if the patient himself or herself can't make them. And it also lays out what therapies they want in an end-of-life situation and what they don't want. Like, I've seen advance directives that say no CPR, and I've seen others that say not only no CPR, but I don't want anything other than comfort measures, which means oxygen and pain medicine. So they vary. They can vary. But the advance directive spells out in advance, before the patient is demented and unable to make that decision, what his or her desires are and who is responsible for making sure that those wishes are carried out. And it depends on the individual and on the family.
What compelled you to write the op-ed piece itself? The fact that you did makes me think that your views are not common in the medical profession.
Unfortunately, they're not the majority view. I would say two things. First of all, I would say the majority of doctors feel as I do. The problem is with the public. I don't think the public is sufficiently educated about the end of life and about what's possible and what isn't. There's a great disconnect between what we really can do as physicians and what the public thinks we can do. The public thinks we can do most anything. In reality, we're very limited. I'll give you a good example. For a paper written a few years ago for an emergency medicine journal, the survival rate from CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, where they pump the chest to artificially provide blood flow when the heart is stopped, the success rate on TV was 90%. In reality, it's less than 5%.
I'm assuming that an awful lot of folks show up in the emergency room unconscious, without such documentation. The family quickly arrive. Now you have half a dozen members of the family, the spouse, children, etc. Nobody knows what the patient's desires are. What do you do in that kind of a scenario?
In that case, I have no choice but to do everything to the best of my ability.
And when you say have to, that's not your own moral perspective. That's the law.
That is the law.
And this explains why it is so vital that all of us individually state our desires, our intentions, document them legally in compliance with state law, share that information with key family members as well as your legal and financial advisors and your physicians and medical care providers, so that when that day comes, and it is these days more likely to be a when rather than an if, you're more likely to be able to get your desires fulfilled.
You said it very well. That's what's needed.
That's Dr. Jeffrey Hosta. He is a board-certified emergency room physician with more than 30 years of experience in emergency medicine and the recent writer of an op-ed piece explaining why doctors are so often torturing dementia patients at the end of their lives and doing so totally unnecessarily. Dr. Hosta, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm Rick Edelman. You're listening to The Truth About Money. 888-PLAN-RICK. Online at ricedelman.com.
For free articles on personal finance, sign up for Rick's email update at rickedelman.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Edelman Show. In our last segment, Dr. Hosta painted a pretty grim picture of people with dementia, but there's hope. And so I'm happy to introduce to the program Dr. Dean Ornish. He's the clinical professor of medicine at the University of California and president and founder of the Preventive Medicine Research Institute. Dr. Ornish is known as the father of lifestyle medicine. He's received numerous honors. Life magazine has called Dr. Ornish one of the 50 most influential members of his generation, and Forbes says he's one of the world's 7 most powerful teachers. You may be familiar with Dr. Ornish. He was the first to prove that diet and other lifestyle changes can actually reverse many chronic diseases, such as coronary heart disease, early stage prostate cancer, and cellular aging. He's the author of 7 best-selling books, and his Ornish diet has been rated by a panel of independent experts as the #1 for heart health diet for the past 8 years in a row. Dr. Ornish, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Rick Edelman Show.
Thanks, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you are now suggesting that changes in lifestyle can actually reverse the symptoms of Alzheimer's?
It's eat well, move more, stress less, love more. It's a whole foods, plant-based diet, moderate exercise, various meditation and stress management techniques, and social support. And for over 40 years, as you've indicated, I've directed research showing for the first time how powerful these simple changes can be and how quickly people can get better. We did a study with Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn, who got the Nobel Prize for discovering telomeres, the ends of our chromosomes that regulate aging, how long we live. And we showed normally they get shorter as you get older. And as your telomeres get shorter, your life gets shorter, and the risk of premature death from all of these illnesses we've talked about goes up. We showed that these same lifestyle changes could actually lengthen telomeres and reverse aging. And so I think we're at a place with Alzheimer's disease very similar to where we were with heart disease 40 years ago. In other words, in my new book, Undo It, I put forth this unifying theory that although I was trained, like all doctors, to view heart disease and diabetes and prostate cancer and Alzheimer's as different diseases, different diagnoses, and different treatments, I've come to realize that they're really the same disease manifesting and masquerading in different forms because they all share the same underlying biological mechanisms, things like chronic inflammation, oxidative stress, changes in the microbiome and telomeres and gene expression and so on. And each one of these is directly influenced by what we eat, how we respond to stress, how much exercise we get, and how much love and support we have. And so we're in the middle now of doing the first randomized trial to see whether we can actually reverse Alzheimer's disease. And we're cautiously optimistic that a more intensive lifestyle intervention may actually reverse it. You know, one of the things about Alzheimer's is that it's a fundamentally isolating experience. In California, once you're diagnosed, then they take your driver's license away, so your world shrinks even more, and sometimes their spouse leaves or their dog dies, and they just start to think, oh, my God, I'm only going to get worse. I'm only going to get worse. It's like being tortured. It's all because you're aware enough, especially the early stages, to know that you're only going to get worse, and you don't want to go out, and you don't want to be with other people because you don't want to embarrass yourself. And then it's almost like the brain starts to shut down. And one of the encouraging things that I learned is that, except at the final stages of Alzheimer's, those memories are still there. We just lose the connections to them. One of the interventions of our program is a support group, kind of an intentional community where people can talk about what it's like to have Alzheimer's with other people who are going through it, and their spouses can. And suddenly they're not so alone and isolated anymore. And one guy said, you know, I lost my driver's license and I can't go out. And he said, well, let's go get a bike together.
So talk about the status of your study.
We're looking at 100 men and women who have early stage Alzheimer's, who live in the San Francisco Bay Area. And by the way, we're still recruiting the last few patients. And so if anyone lives in the San Francisco Bay Area who's listening to this, just go to ornish.com, and there's a place you can check to let us know that you're interested, and we'll contact you. And we're using the state-of-the-art measures. As we do in all of our studies, ironically, we're using these very high-tech, state-of-the-art scientific measures to assess these very low-tech and low-cost interventions.
So a key to this is once you get the results of your study, and if they indeed prove successful that these lifestyle changes you describe can improve an Alzheimer's patient's condition and prevent others who don't yet have the disease from developing symptoms of the disease, we need to get the word out. And so along those lines, I'm very happy to now welcome to the program Luis Ahoyos. He is the executive director of the Oceanic Preservation Society. Luis is widely regarded as one of the world's most prominent photographers. He has circled the globe dozens of times. He's shot hundreds of covers for magazines like National Geographic, Fortune, Smithsonian, Time, Newsweek, The New York Times Magazine, Sports Illustrated, and he's also directed documentaries. His first was called The Cove, which won more than 100 film awards around the world, and the first documentary in history to sweep all the film guides, and he won the Oscar for the best documentary feature. His second was Racing Extinction, seen by 36 million people in 220 countries on the first day that it aired. And just a couple of months ago, his most recent film, The Game Changers, has already become the top-selling documentary in iTunes history. Its executive producers include James Cameron, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Jackie Chan. Louis, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Louis, your film, The Game Changers, demonstrates how world-class athletes are relying on plant-based diets to achieve peak performance. Do you see a connection between that film, The Game Changers, and the documentary you're now producing about Dean's study?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, we interviewed Dean for The Game Changers, and it was about a two-hour interview, and I remember thinking at the time that, my God, this interview would be worthy of a film just in itself. That's why I came back, and you know, I wanted to know more about how to live longer. That film is geared around, it's not just about plant-based super athletes, but, you know, when you get older, you can use that same diet to, like Dean has proved to part of this program, to reverse these chronic diseases. And I'm in my early 60s now, and I'm interested in living longer without chronic disease. And so I wanted to find out more about Dean's work. When he talked about doing this study to reverse Alzheimer's, I thought this is an incredible way to talk about, you know, the things that we all face as we get older. And you get to be my age, everybody starts to drop around you with all these chronic diseases. Dean and his staff have potentially something that could actually reverse the disease. This is groundbreaking. But even if Dean gets the study published in The Lancet or one of these, you know, wonderful medical journals, the average person doesn't read those. You know, my job is to make a compelling documentary that people of all ages are going to want to see. And I was told Dean yesterday, he makes it really easy to be a documentary filmmaker when you can see these incredible changes that these people are making. You know, yesterday Dean brought in a tango instructor, and just to see the joy of these people, they are, you know, I'll say that even if you can't clinically say that they're getting better with Alzheimer's, their lives are 100% improved since they've come through the program, you know, 26 weeks ago or so with the second cohort. They look like a younger version of themselves, almost like a younger sister or brother. They've all lost weight. They're all healthier because three times a week they're coming in and Dean gives them 21 meals a week of a whole foods plant-based diet, gets them through an exercise program. They do the group support. You see them coming out of the fog, becoming more alive. So even if it's not reversing the disease, their life is getting incredibly more improved. But that's true of anybody, whether you have a chronic disease or not. You know, these four basic pillars that Dean promotes are good for not just reversing a disease, but letting all of us live a healthier, more thriving life.
Now, Louis, you produce films as a nonprofit organization. What's the budget for this production?
They're expensive, you know, because over a $2 million budget. But, you know, we have high production values. You know, people say, like, boy, those are really expensive films. But, you know, everything that we do is geared around scaling social change. Our goal is to, when people get out of the film, that they feel changed.
And where are you getting the money for the documentary?
It's from you, Rick. I appreciate it. Rick, you are the main sponsor of this film, and we appreciate it.
I want to amplify what Louis said, that, Rick, we are deeply grateful to you, because I always say awareness is the first step in healing. And clearly, Louis is the best documentary filmmaker on the planet, and just like what you do in your work, he's the Rick Edelman of documentaries. So we're deeply grateful. And the film isn't just about the Alzheimer's study. it's not like you have to do one set of diet and lifestyle changes for reversing heart disease, a different one for reversing prostate cancer or for diabetes or whatever. It's really the same for all of them. They're really the same condition, just coming out in different ways. It's often why you see many people can have heart disease and diabetes and high blood pressure and high cholesterol and so on, because they're just the same thing manifesting in different forms. But because of your generosity, Rick, we'll not only be able to show this documentary on Amazon and Netflix and in theaters and so on, but we'll be able to give it away for free to Alzheimer's organizations. It'll be shown in medical schools and nursing schools and support groups and so on. So we'll be able to empower millions of people that we'll never meet with information that hopefully can really help transform their lives for the better.
Well, it's a real honor for Gene and me to participate with the two of you in this very important project. And just for everyone's edification, Gene and I are providing half the funding for this project, and Edelman Financial Engines is providing the other half. We recognize that Alzheimer's is something that affects so many of our clients and so many Americans across the country, in fact, as a worldwide issue. And so we are very honored, frankly, to be able to support the incredibly talented work of Luis Cejuelos, one of the greatest filmmakers in our nation, and this incredibly vital research that Dr. Dean Ornish is putting together. And we're very hopeful that the studies will prove successful, that the film will capture the significance and importance of these studies and raise the level of awareness and education for millions of Americans so that we can improve our health and that of our families as well. So we consider ourselves to be the real beneficiaries here, and it's an honor to be working on this project with the two of you.
Well, we are so grateful to you and Gene. It's beyond words.
When do you expect the trials to be completed, your research to be published, and when, Louis, do you expect the film to be released?
Probably a year and a half from now.
So somewhere around summer of 2021, we hope to see Louis's documentary available not only in theaters, but also streaming through all the online services, and we're really looking forward to the production. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us here on The Rick Edelman Show.
Thanks to you and Gene. We are deeply grateful beyond words.
Thank you, Rick. Really appreciate your support.
Thanks for joining me on this holiday season weekend. I hope your Hanukkah, your Christmas are wonderful this week. Happy holidays from all of us here at Edelman Financial Engines. That's a wrap.
As a reward, you'll have no radio for the rest of the week. Go to your room.
See you next week.
Get the truth about money every weekend on The Rick Edelman Show.